Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, today we'll be joined in the studio by Pam Cady, an expert bookseller with University Bookstore up here in the Northwest. Pam's going to share 20 holiday reading and gift book ideas with us, and she's picked out some awesome titles. From memoir to illustration, humor to exploration of the human condition, there's something there for everybody. So grab a pen and paper and stay tuned for Pam Cady. But first, according to a U.S. government study, on average, 24 people per minute are victims of rape, physical violence, or stalking, not by a stranger, but by an intimate partner in the United States. I talked with journalist Jane Velez Mitchell a few weeks ago. She was due to be live on the show, and because she's a TV journalist, her schedule changed at the very last moment. But we did sit down a few days later, and I recorded an interview with her. And we talked about a case that has outraged many across the country. And I tend to stay away from these kind of stories because they're often sensationalized. But in this particular case, I think there is some learning. There's some learning to take away from it, especially at this time of the year when holiday domestic abuse seems to take a turn for the worse. So Jane and I looked at domestic violence from a different perspective. I think often when we think of abusive relationships, we tend to think of men committing those acts, whether they're stalkers or violent acts. We generally assume that it's the male in the partnership that's committing those acts. But in this case, it was the woman, someone who was and still is using her feminine wiles to manipulate others. And we'll discuss some of the red flags that the victim's friends saw, but unfortunately the victim overlooked it to his cost. Mitchell spent the last few years following this case in depth, beyond the trial, beyond what we heard in the news, because she felt compelled to get to the truth and be a voice for the victim, and so that others could hopefully learn from those red flags. So we're going to take a very quick break, and when we come back, I'll play you the recording that I did with Jane Velez Mitchell. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Stay tuned.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services, if you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair.
If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
They seem like such a perfect couple. There must be some other explanation.
Why doesn't she just leave?
I don't understand why she puts up with him.
It takes two to argue.
It's not my place to interfere.
If someone you know is a victim of intimate partner abuse, you can give them back their voice.
Call 1-800-799-SAFE or go to thehotline.org.
Let your voice be heard.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Bringing you fresh perspectives every day. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And as I said in the beginning, we're going to be talking with Jane Velez Mitchell. Actually, I already talked with her, but you haven't heard this conversation yet, so we're going to bring that to you in just a second. With HLN's Jane Velez Mitchell, I should say former because the show is not on air anymore, but she is a multi-award-winning television journalist, a best-selling author. She was the host of HLN's Jane Velez Mitchell, which was seen on CNN for a number of years. And she's frequently in the media as an expert commentator on high profile court cases. She's been just about on every TV station there is, I think. She's won many awards, including 3 Genesis Awards from the Humane Society of the United States and for Celebrity Justice, as well as a Los Angeles Emmy Award and New York Emmy Award. And Jane Velez Mitchell and I sat down and we talked about her new book, Exposed, The Secret Life of Jodi Arias. It's a different look at domestic violence. When we hear about a person being stalked or abused by a former lover or spouse, we almost automatically assume the abuser is a male. Not so in this case. And we're talking about your book, Exposed, The Secret Life of Jodi Arias, who, of course, was found guilty of murdering her ex-boyfriend. So I'm really curious about what drives you to tell these kind of stories, and in particular, the follow this story, because you put hours and hours into this trial.
I really did devote my life to this trial for months on end. It is a fascinating insight into the human condition. What we see in the Jodi Arias case and in my book Exposed is an extreme example of what we all encounter in milder forms every day. This woman viciously slaughtered her boyfriend because she is an untreated borderline personality disorder sufferer, and I'm not giving any excuses for her. That doesn't mean that she's legally insane. She certainly knew right from wrong. She premeditated, elaborately plotted this vicious killing, stabbing him 29 times and slitting his throat. She engaged in a very, very diabolical cover-up. But she is somebody who has borderline personality disorder, and they do not know boundaries. When they set their eyes on someone, usually a love partner, they really feel entitled to their entire life. And so this is exactly what Jodi did. She set her sights on this Mormon motivational speaker, Travis Alexander, handsome guy, and said, you're going to be my Prince Charming. You're going to solve my money problems. You're going to give me kids. My biological clock is ticking. You're going to sweep me off my feet and fix my life. And she offered him a sexual fire sale. And he was willing to have sex with her, but he wasn't willing to marry her. And the more sex they had, the less marriage material she became in his eyes, according to his friends. And so ultimately, when he couldn't take it anymore, and her obsessiveness and her obsession with him, and he rejected her and decided to take a virginal Mormon girl to a vacation in Cancun where all their mutual friends would be, that's when she said, oh, yeah?
Right.
You're going to suffer. I'm going to kill you.
Right. So I'm really interested in looking at some of those red flags there, because they were there. She had a previous relationship with a boyfriend called Daryl, and she mimicked his ex-wife to the extent that she got a job in the same place, in the same restaurant. She bought the same kind of car. And yet he didn't see any of those signs either.
Well, there's the interesting thing that is a life lesson. People tried to warn Travis about Jody, but he was so blinded by her sexuality and what she was offering him, he couldn't see it. And Daryl also seemed to think that this was just a lovely young lady. But other people who were not having sex with her could see that there was something seriously wrong with her. And Travis's friends warned him, she's crazy. She conducts surveillance on you. She listens outside your door when you go into another room. She peeps into your emails and she hacks your email account. Get away from her. She's dangerous. And so I think the life lesson is when people around you start telling you that the person you're involved with is dangerous and that there's something wrong with them, listen to them because they can be objective. You can't.
Yeah, well, it's a psychological fact that love is blind with all that serotonin going around our brain, whether it's love or sexual attraction, it's the same thing. So she was very chameleon-like. We've just talked about that. And when she met Travis, she very, very quickly became a Mormon. I mean, that to me would have been a red flag that somebody switches faith like that so quickly.
Right. That's exactly what I'm talking about with borderlines. The way Dr. Drew Pinsky explained it to me, and I quote him extensively in my book, Exposed, borderlines wake up in the morning and they don't know who they are. They feel highly alienated. Their life is like a black and white sketch. They don't feel being part of a world. So what they do is they seek to latch on to somebody else to give them an identity. So that person's friends become their friends, their religion becomes their religion, their job becomes their job, and that's exactly what she did with Travis. And what better way, often these untreated borderlines are highly sexualized, because what better way to mesh with somebody else and try to merge and get a sense of identity than through the act of sex? And in my book, I interviewed some of Travis's close friends who said that he described her as a nymphomaniac who was capable of orgasming repeatedly to an astounding number. And of course, people have said, well, maybe she was faking it. But to that I reply, well, I could see faking it once or twice, but the amount of times that she purportedly faked it, if she faked it, that mm-hmm. would be working overtime. So I think she was a hypersexual individual who used sex to try to merge with somebody else. And that is the ill-fated encounter they had. The more sex she offered, the less marriage material, the lower her worth in his eyes. But she couldn't stop herself because, A, she's manipulative, and she mistakenly thought that was a way to get him. And B, being somebody who was an untreated borderline, she was highly overly sexed because that's her way of meshing with somebody and getting an identity.
Yeah, she's obviously very manipulative. I mean, you can see that if you watch her in her court trial, you know, how she maneuvers for the camera and for the jurors. I read your book cover to cover. I didn't read anything in there that really said, hey, this is what made Jody who she is. Yes, she had some not good stuff happen to her, but it was nothing that hasn't happened to a million other people.
Well, let me say this. As the shrinks often say, a lot of things in life are multi-determined, meaning that there's a mountain of little things that converge to create the person that we are. And I think sometimes we look for that one defining moment,
right,
where in reality it's a lot of environmental factors and perhaps an innate mental illness that converge. You remember the one instance when she was a child and she and her friend were growing a little pot plant.
Right, on the
roof.
And
they used her mother's Tupperware, and the mother found the pot plant and called the cops on her daughter. And that was a shattering moment. Her best friend says that she believed that that moment broke her. I think she had a very fragile hold on reality, and that she was living in a tiny little world in a small town in California, and that she was able to keep it together. And then she sensed that betrayal from her parents. I don't believe they beat her, as she claimed. I think she was just taking a page from the Casey Anthony case, where Casey threw her mother under the bus and got acquitted, and she figured, well, maybe if I throw my parents under the bus and accuse them of beating me, I'll get acquitted too. Didn't work. But I do believe they were strict disciplinarians. I heard that from several sources. And so that sense of, okay, here you are, you have a fragile identity, your life is just a very hazy sketch. The only thing you have to hang on to are your parents, and then your parents call the cops on you when you have a little pot plant. I think that like ripped open her mental illness. And after that, she never trusted her parents ever again. The parents say that to the detective when they're talking to him, and that they became the enemy. So she was alone in the world. She developed an us versus them mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that if you had to pick one incident, that was probably the incident that broke her. And then they proceeded to move from that small town where she had friends, and I spent a lot of time talking to her very best friend, and Jody was devastated. So now she's alienated from her parents, and her parents take her away from that hometown, and they move to a new town where she's kind of on the outs. It's a different kind of community. She feels like she can't fit in and integrate into the high school, and high school is difficult for most people. And then she truly feels alienated, and then she gets involved with the bad, you know, the goth character, who is not a bad guy, but who is a goth character, another outsider, Bobby. And they go off and sort of form their own little universe. And, you know, when a fantasy world, and this applies to many people, but when that sort of fantasy world that somebody makes up because they can't deal with the real world feels more real than the actual real world, it's a dangerous place because they don't really feel like anything they're doing is real. She could lie with abandon. She made up stories. And I think that's a mark of somebody who doesn't really have any real relationship with real life. In other words, a pathological liar doesn't even know when they're lying because they have no, they're colorblind to the truth. The truth is whatever comes out of their mouth, whatever serves them at that moment in time, because they're not really connected to the real world. They're living in a fantasy of their own creation in their minds. And
right.
That's why they're dangerous,
right.
Because nothing feels real to them.
Right. So your book exposed. Yes, apparently, yes. So your book exposed, I mean, you've uncovered facts in there that did not make it into court. They're back in court now, as I understand it, to determine her sentence. Is this going to be a complete retrial? Is that how that works?
Well, we're not sure. It's a big question mark because something like this happens so rarely that you have to impanel a new jury just to hear the question of whether she should live or die. They have to bring the jurors up to speed on the trial. They can't decide something that momentous without knowing the facts of the case. And that very situation opens the door for Jody and her lawyers to try to retry the case all over again and try to throw Travis under the bus. You know, they try to paint him as a monster during the trial where she was convicted. She accused him of everything under the sun, from pedophilia to beating her, none of which I believe is true. And I even issue a warning in my book. Be careful. Anything that comes out of her mind or her mouth,
mm-hmm.
Regard with caution, and that it's really the challenge of the reader to try to determine where truth ends and fiction begins, because like all accomplished liars, she seamlessly weaves real events in with her lies. So like the baptism, she said that Travis baptized her into the Mormon church, and there is a picture we have of the two of them at the baptism ceremony. But then she says after that he takes her home and forces her into oral anal sex. Now, well, nobody was there behind closed doors, but his friends don't believe it. So, you know, that's the challenge with these pathological liars.
Right.
She's brilliant. That's one of the tragedies of this case is that she could have gone to Hollywood and become an actress or a screenwriter and done very well, because she makes up stuff that a team of Hollywood screenwriters trapped in a closet for a week couldn't come up with.
Right, right. It is a fascinating story, and I know you say many people have been outraged by it. What do you think is the main source of the outrage, Jane?
Well, she took a consensual, kinky, S&M-ish kind of relationship and turned it into domestic violence. That's what I think really put people over the top. And, you know, it makes it so much harder for real victims, real women who have been truly victims of beatings and domestic violence to come forward, because once she devalues that and tries to turn her invited behavior, you know, they engaged in what she considered degrading sex, and that he made her feel like a used piece of toilet paper. Well, as Prosecutor Juan Martinez so eloquently pointed out, oh, and you drove hundreds of miles to get another dose of that degrading sex, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was invited behavior on her part. She literally, after they broke up, she claims she broke up with him, but he's not around to say whether he actually broke up with her. They were living in two different cities. She was in the Palm Springs area in California. He was in Mesa, Arizona. She moves from Palm Springs to Mesa and gets an apartment right near his house and then proceeds to go to his house. And, yes, he would let her in, and, yes, they would have sex. But the point is, if it was domestic violence, why did she move from one state to another to be closer to it so she could have more of it? It wasn't domestic violence. It was a kinky S&M relationship, and she surreptitiously recorded one of their kinky phone calls so that she could use that to blackmail him. That's the case I make in the book. It's a theory of mine. I can't prove it unequivocally, but it's circumstantial evidence. And I believe she said, "You're going to take another girl to Cancun? Okay, well, I've got this tape that I recorded, and you better not, because I'll play this tape for your bishops or whoever." And that's when he said, "You're the worst thing that ever happened to me. You've betrayed me," and still would not take her to Cancun. And that's when I think she decided she would kill him.
Yeah. Well, I know you felt compelled to be a voice for Travis because he's not here to speak for himself. And I'm just wondering what we can learn from this story, what you'd like to leave our listeners with.
Well, I think that the ultimate, I'd say, character defect that Jody had is that she cannot accept any responsibility for what she has done in the world. It's always the world's fault. It's always somebody else's fault. And that's an extreme example of a character defect that I think a lot of us suffer from. And I think the mark of adulthood is to say, what's my part in it? And it's a challenge for all of us. It's a struggle for me in my life when things go wrong, for me to look at myself objectively and say, what was my part in it? So that I'm not a victim, but I'm a participant. And that, I think, is the ultimate lesson of the book.
Right. Well, Jane Velez Mitchell, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
So delighted to talk to you. Thank you.
And the name of the book, again, Exposed, the Secret Life of Jody Arias. And as I said, a very different look at domestic violence. And, you know, a huge lesson there, because this woman cried wolf about domestic violence, which, you know, dilutes the impact when other people are in a very serious situation. Jane Velez Mitchell, of course, was my guest. And just to give you a quick update, that trial actually is still underway. I read this weekend that it's expected to last until early or mid-December on sentencing. So we are going to change gears totally. We're still going to talk books, but we have somebody very special with us joining us today. So I hope you grab a pen and paper and get a cup of tea and come back and sit down with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please stay tuned.
They seem like such a perfect couple. There must be some other explanation.
Why doesn't she just leave?
I don't understand why she puts up with him.
It takes two to argue.
It's not my place to interfere.
If someone you know is a victim of intimate partner abuse, you can give them back their voice.
Call 1-800-799-SAFE or go to thehotline.org.
Let your voice be heard.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to NuPro Supplements, we cover the world of animals. This week, December 7th, it's Shelter Rescue Sanctuary and anything that helps our animal friends Sunday. We'll check in with the Mollywood Birds in Bellingham, the Macaw Sanctuary Birds in Carnation, and the All-Breed Equine Rescue Horses in Marysville. More details on other animal causes, plus, by request, a surprise visit from super popular past guests. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, literary journalist, award-winning writer, and New York Times bestselling author Gail Shee shares tales from her new memoir, Daring. And returning guest Nicolette Harn-Neiman says, if you're going to eat meat, do it humanely and healthfully in defending beef. See conversationslive.net for more than 300 conversations with experts ranging from conservationists to National Geographic explorers, New York Times bestselling authors, innovative business leaders, and cutting-edge health and well-being professionals. Join us live on Mondays at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair has a new Facebook page, so you can see what's happening on our show and what we're up to between shows. Like us on Facebook and look out for upcoming contest drawings.
Listen live at 1150kknw.com. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Well, we are going to spend some time talking about one of my favorite things, books. We're lucky enough to have Pam Cady join us today. She's from University Bookstore. And I'm going to bring her on and let her tell us in her own words why she got into selling books and how long she's been doing it. She's been doing it for a long, long time. Very definitely considered an expert on this subject. And I, first of all, want to thank University Bookstore for letting you come over and spend time with us today, because I know this is one of your very busiest times of year. Pam Cady, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So we're going to talk about holiday reading and gift book suggestions. And I know you've got 21 books here that we're going to talk about today, some in more depth than others. But so tell us how you got into selling books and why.
Well, it's just something I think you're born with, wanting to just learn about the world in ways that you can just sit down and read a book and get away from everything else and sit and just read. And that's how I got involved in it. My mother was a huge reader, and she made me learn to read in front of her and just over and over and over again read and read and read. And that's really, it was her joy that
right. And I know that passion and joy is passed on. It's a great thing, I think. You know, one of my favorite times when I was a kid was every Saturday morning, because my mother had a business to run and so did my dad. Every Saturday morning, my grandmother would take us to the bank to put some pocket money in the bank. And then the next stop would be the library. And it used to be my my highlight of the week.
Absolutely. That was my first job, working at the library.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. So let's jump in here and share some of these great books with our listeners. And I know the first one you're going to talk about today is called Not That Kind of Girl by Lena Dunham. Tell us a little bit about this and why you chose this one.
Well, we just had her at the store, actually. We had a huge event with her, and she's so hilarious. She's, of course, from the hit show Girls. She writes it and she directs it. She produces it. She is the juggernaut, really, of her generation. And she is a very, very, very personal book. It's not going to be for everybody, but it's for especially women. And I would love for young men to read it, too, because it really talks about what it means to be a young woman now.
Right.
And all of the things that we all go through, the horrible and the blessed, everything. In fact, some people say, okay, that's a little bit too much information for me. But she does it in such a way that's hilarious and at the same time healing and truthful and honest. And it makes, I just wish that I had it when I was a young girl, so that I could see, oh my gosh, I'm not the only awkward person out in the world.
Yeah. Well, and I understand from the review that if you like Nora Ephron, Tina Fey, David Sedaris, it's in a similar kind of vein.
Absolutely. Yeah. She's that funny and she's that good of a writer.
Very good. All right. So that's a great one. And short pieces, too, which sometimes you don't want to sit down and read a whole book. So that's great.
Oh, absolutely.
And so next you're going to talk about, she's a favorite of many writers, of course, Anne Lamott.
Just a wonderful woman as well as writer.
And so this is a novel, though, as I understand. It's a memoir.
It's
right?
a memoir.
Memoir.
Yeah, yeah. In short pieces, once again, you don't have to read the whole thing in one sitting or over and over and over again. You can pick and choose when you want to read it. But once again, she's so funny and so honest. But the difference with Anne Lamott is that she comes from not a religion-based background, but a spiritually-based background where forgiveness is king, and there are small victories throughout the throughout your life and throughout your days. They don't have to be large victories in order for you to learn the lessons that you need to learn to go through. To be better to yourself, to be better to the people in front of you in those minute conversations that you have with people, and even those small relationships that you have with people. They teach you something every single day. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of anger. There's some joy. And she's so funny.
Yeah. And so the book that I know Anne Lamott for most of all, as would probably most writers, is Bird by Bird.
Yeah.
This is for every kind of audience, though.
Every kind of audience. Yeah.
Right. So I know you have one on your list that I don't have, and that's The Boys in the Boat that you're going to talk about.
Yeah. I don't know if you've read this.
I have not.
It's been around for, probably now. It's just out in paperback this summer. It is probably one of the best reads you'll ever read. I'm not kidding. It's about nine Americans, young boys in college at the University of Washington, and how they come together to be on a crew team, and they go and they win the gold medal in front of Hitler.
Oh, wow.
And all the trials and tribulations they go through in order to get there.
Right.
It's brilliant and so heart-opening. It's, if you really want your heart opened, this is the book for you.
Okay. And so any age group, because since it's boys, but I mean, any age group,
oh,
obviously
no.
You enjoyed it.
Oh, I loved it. You know, any age group at all. I'd say from early teens to whoever. And it's actually a terrific business book, too, because it's all about team building and what it means to be on a team.
Okay. So that's called The Boys in the Boat.
Yeah.
Very
good. By Daniel James Brown.
Very good. Very good. All right. Next, we're going to talk about Chris Hadfield.
Yeah.
A name that we've heard a lot of lately.
Yes. And, you know, actually, he was just at our store lately, too. He's a really interesting guy. Astronaut. He has a Twitter that has just blown up, thousands and thousands of followers. And he's taken pictures from that he's, you know.
You can show our camera if you want to hold up some pictures there.
Taken some pictures from above the Earth. And it's just, they're just amazing. You feel so small and yet so a part of everything.
Right, right. It's fascinating looking at those pictures. And they look really beautifully shot.
Look at that. I mean, it's just, those are cities.
Yeah.
And they're, yeah.
Whole different perspective.
It really makes your life, as I said, feel small and large at the same time.
Yeah. And that's called You Are Here, Around the World in 92 Minutes, Photographs from the International Space Station by Chris Hadfield.
The next is The Who, The What, and The When by Jenny Volvolsky, Julia Rothman, and Matt Lamoff. It's 65 artists illustrate the secret sidekicks of history, and it's from Chronicle Books. This is a delightful book. It's for the artist in your life, but it's also for the person who wants to know a little bit more history. Who is behind those really famous people? There's always at least one person in someone's life who champions them for them to be able to go on and be successful in whatever field they're going to be successful in.
Yeah, tell us the story of Harper Lee, because that was To Kill a Mockingbird. Well, she was actually, I know this because I got the pitch that when the book was first published, and she was actually given money. She was actually supported for, I think it was a year, by a couple who decided that she needed to write this book. And so that's one side of To Kill a Mockingbird that we've never heard about before.
Yeah.
We just assumed, you know, she wrote this, but she actually received financial support from a couple who just believed that story needed to be told. Interesting.
Yeah. They're all interesting stories and beautiful artwork that go with the stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Dorothy and Otis Designing the American Dream. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Is that the next one, right?
That's the next one. Dorothy and Otis. Yeah. By Norman Hathaway and Dan Nadel. And it is a story that's never been told. It's so gorgeous. It's an art and design book. Dorothy and Otis were married, and they were at the very forefront of a new wave of advertising, which was the billboard. And when the billboard first started, it wasn't like the billboards of today.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to make sure, since there's never been a billboard before, that it actually looked good. So all of the billboards, when they were first designed, were art was in mind. And so these billboards that Otis and Dorothy designed were absolutely stunning. And so you'll find billboard art in here, that Wrigley's double mint chewing gum were, oh my God, they're,
it's
just
changed so much as well
beautiful.
Over the years when you look at it, yeah.
I know. And then they went on to do the Cubs, all of the Cubs at Wrigley Field. They designed uniforms. Then from Wrigley Field, they went to Catalina Island and they designed all of Catalina Island. It's absolutely stunning what they did, and it's just such a beautiful book, and it tells their story as well. It tells the story of their marriage. Then they weren't together, and then they got back together again.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that book's by Norman Hathaway, Dorothy and Otis, Designing the American Dream. Great book to leave on the cocktail table there.
Absolutely.
And a great conversation starter, I think, to have those kind of books on. Looks as though you've got another picture book there for us.
I do, and this is for the Seahawks sports stand out there, which I am a huge fan of the Seahawks. So, of course, I had to bring this. The world champion Seahawks, we are 12, with a preface by Paul Allen, a foreword by Russell Wilson, an introduction by Steve Rabel, and an afterword by Pete Carroll. How could you miss?
Very good.
Yeah, and there are all the pictures from the first game last year all the way until the very, very end. And the pictures are absolutely beautiful. And it's something that you're going to want to look at to remind yourself what an amazing season they had last year. I look at the pictures a lot, even though I've seen them already. You just want to go back and look at them because it makes you happy.
Right. Right. Good. Well, we're going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue. Pam Cady has a lot more books to tell us about. She's brought them over from University Bookstore today. So we thank Pam for being with us during this busy time. And we thank University Bookstore for letting her come out and talk to us as well. And we'll be right back. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Cervantes. Okay. Daniel Defoe. Samuel Richardson. Henry Fielding. Lawrence Stern.
Hello.
Mary Wollstonecraft.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, literary journalist, award-winning writer, and New York Times bestselling author Gail Shee shares tales from her new memoir, Daring. And returning guest Nicolette Harn-Niemann says, if you're going to eat meat, do it humanely and healthfully in defending beef. See conversationslive.net for more than 300 conversations with experts ranging from conservationists to National Geographic explorers, New York Times bestselling authors, innovative business leaders, and cutting-edge health and well-being professionals. Join us live on Mondays at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net.
They seem like such a perfect couple. There must be some other explanation.
Why doesn't she just leave?
I don't understand why she puts up with him.
It takes two to argue.
It's not my place to interfere.
If someone you know is a victim of intimate partner abuse, you can give them back their voice.
Call 1-800-799-SAFE or go to thehotline.org.
Let your voice be heard.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
Radio with no added hormones or preservatives. All natural Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
Umberto Eco.
I don't understand this either.
Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
Mi casa, tu casa. Roddy Doyle.
Welcome back, everyone. And of course, that's a great list of authors that Eric's playing us back in with. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And I am very pleased to have Pam Cady with us in the studio today. She's joined us from University Bookstore. She is an expert bookseller and has been for many years. And she and her colleague lugged 21 books in here for us to look at. So, let's just dive in because we've got a lot more books to go through and make the most of the time here. And the next book is by Anthony, is it Doer? Doer?
Doer, yeah. Doer?
Okay, All the Light We Cannot See. And this was a National Book Award finalist.
It was. And it was one of the most beautiful books of the year. It really was. Beautiful language, just stunning characters. And it takes place during World War II. But it's a novel that happens during the war, and but it is more. It's not your typical war novel. It follows two young people, a blind girl and an orphan boy, who's a genius at the radio, and what happens when Hitler takes over, and what their two different paths are to find each other.
Mm.
And it's not a love story. They don't find each other and oh, and then it's a love story. It's not that. It's just their two paths and what happens and how they help each other. And then what happens after that. It's just a beautiful, beautifully written book. And I if you don't read another novel this year, read All the Light
You
Cannot
See. Wow, that's pretty high acclaim. I've noticed lately there seem to be a lot of books based in the Second World War, the Hitler period particularly.
Yeah.
I mean, is that...
I think that's true. Yeah. I think people are really looking back at that time and finding it fascinating, and more stuff is coming out about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that, for whatever reason, people are just fascinated right now.
Mm, very good. All right. And so we have another novel, The High Divide by Lynn Enger.
Yep. By Algonquin, from Algonquin Press. Another one of my favorite books of the year. For me, a book about a grand amends. It's a book about this man who leaves his wife and his children behind because he feels compelled to make amends because there's something that's happened in his past that will not leave him alone. It's ruining his sleep. It's ruining his relationships. It's ruining his life. And if he doesn't do something about it, it will do him in.
Yeah.
So he actually, he loves his family, but he has to go. And it's his journey, and then they follow him.
And this is set, I understand, in Minnesota's Western Prairie, right? And he literally just leaves a tiny little note for them. So
tiny.
There's this mystery, intrigue around it. And then
exactly.
I'm guessing, I have not read this book, but I'm guessing the landscape is another character in the book.
It is. Yeah. And the history. It's just one of those, once again, a heart-opening book because of what happens in the novel. It's just, he, like I said, he has to make amends, and he does it.
Yeah, very good. All right, so let's move on to, I think the next one is Natalie Goldberg. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah. Now, this is interesting because Natalie is known to writers, of course, for the exercise books that she's done. I did not know she was also an artist.
Oh, she's an amazing painter.
Yeah.
She started, you know, as all writers can attest, I think, you just feel stuck sometimes with the word, with the written word. You're just, I need something else to do to get my mind off of what I'm working on. And so she started taking up painting. And it turns out she's an amazing painter. These very colorful, wonderful paintings have come out of her having to get away from writing. And she is actually pretty well known now for her paintings.
Wow. I did not know that. And they're beautiful. They're very colorful. And her whole goal in this really is to help people break down their creative barriers to explore creativity.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
She's all about the creativity. And unlike with her writing, which she finds a little bit more laborious, she just finds joy in painting because she doesn't have a critical painting brain. So for her... painting, she just sits there and she does it. She doesn't think about it. She doesn't judge it.
Right.
She just does it.
Right. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. So that she's got no inner editor there.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Next one is Emily St. John Mandel. So Station 11.
Station 11 is an extremely, once again, National Book Award nominee. It's extremely interesting because it's a post-apocalyptic novel that doesn't have anything to do with zombies. There's no gratuitous violence. It's really about what would life be like if it happened, if a flu came around and wiped out 99% of the population. What would be left? Who would be left? And how would the pieces be picked up?
Mm-hmm.
But the structure is super creative. It's not straightforward. It takes place, the opening scene is this famous actor on stage playing King Lear. And he has a heart attack and dies. And someone from the audience comes up who had been a paparazzi, who had hounded him through his years and had stopped being a paparazzi and to become an EMT, and runs up on stage to try to save his life. And so you find out all of these little bits and pieces about people who are around him on stage. Well, he leaves, and everybody who leaves that night finds out just that night that this huge flu has come and started infecting everywhere. And there are few people that the novel follows, and they all somehow are connected to this actor who dies in the first scene of the novel. And it's brilliant.
Okay, so tell us the name of that book again and the author. It's Station 11, Emily St. John Mandel. And that's a New York Times bestseller, too,
yeah,
as well as being a book award finalist. And then we've got a number one New York Times bestseller, 2014 National Book Award finalist, is it Chast or Chast?
I think it's Chast.
Chast.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? We had Stephen Merritt on the show not long ago, and she illustrated his book for her, 101 two-letter words for Scrabble, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And this book is called Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant? Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? And this is a memoir, and it actually deals with the aging of her parents.
Yes, and the death of her mother. Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant is a graphic novel, actually. And it's, if you know who Roz Chast is, a New Yorker cartoonist.
Right.
It's all illustrated very much like she illustrates a New Yorker cartoon, except that it's about her and her relationship to her aging parents, which drives her absolutely insane. And how she needs to take care of them. And then finally, her mom dies. And how she deals with her mother who's dying and how difficult that is. But what's really great about the book is that so many of us have had gone through this. I myself went through this. Yeah. And it truly speaks to people who have gone through it or who are going through it or who are going to go through it in such honest words and It's really well done.
Can you just open up the page? Because that is most, you said it's a graphic novel, so it mostly is graphics, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Just quick up there. So it's a great cocktail book again, I think. You know,
yeah.
I love to leave these books on my cocktail table in my studio because, you know, when people are waiting or just sitting there, it gives them something to do and starts conversation, which
absolutely.
Is always good.
Yeah. And art. Who doesn't want to look at art?
Exactly. Yeah. All right, so the next one is Oliver Jeffers. It's Once Upon an Alphabet, the alphabet book to top all others, apparently from the illustrator of the number one New York Times bestselling The Day the Crayons Quit. I love the title of this. This one's Once Upon an Alphabet. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Oliver Jeffers is just a really beloved children's illustrator. Lots and lots of books and from Penguin. And this particular one is an epic. He tells a story for every letter, and they're beautifully illustrated.
Oh yeah,
it's perfect for any. It's really perfect for me. I love his. I love his style, but it's perfect for any child who's learning their alphabet and wants to be read to at the same time.
It's such good therapy, actually, looking through children's books.
Oh,
it is great therapy if you just need a little break for a while.
It is, and the art is so amazing, especially this, just these four next ones that I'm going to talk about. The art is just Beautiful.
Okay, so these are primarily, these are children's books. These are old children's books now. Beautiful. Look at that. Princess Cam Cam. What a name. Fox's Garden is the book. So tell us about that one.
Well, Fox's Garden. Fox is, it's in the dead of winter, and Fox is looking for a place to stay. And he goes to several houses out when she comes out of the woods, but everybody kicks her or sends her away, and she finally finds.
That's beautiful.
She finally finds a place to stay.
Hold it up that way.
And a little boy gives her some food in a basket.
Yeah.
And then she has little foxes. And she and the little foxes come out of the greenhouse that they were staying in and go to the little boy's room while he's asleep at night and set up a bunch of flowers all around his room, and then they leave.
Oh, beautiful.
It is absolutely, it's just, they're exquisite. Illustrations, because they're cutouts, and you would never know that they were cutouts unless you really, really, really looked at the pictures.
Right, right.
So,
stunning.
Yeah, they're really stunning.
Lovely. And the next one is The Lion and the Bird by Marion Dubuc. Now we've got to, let's quickly do this one, and then I want to talk about the two announcements that we're going to make about University Bookstore in case we run out of time. And if we've got time, we'll look at those, but we've got 3 minutes left.
Sure. This one is The Lion and the Bird by Marion Dubuc, and this is a really heartwarming tale about a lion and a bird and how they become friends and help each other. And the bird leaves, and then the lion is lonely, and then the bird comes back, and they're friends.
Very good.
It's beautiful.
Beautiful, yeah. And so tell us about the two events that are coming up.
We have, the first one, before these books fall over.
That's okay, just let them fall.
Fabio Viviani, and of course from Top Chef. He's going to be at University Bookstore. When is he going to be at University Bookstore?
Well, I think I have that, so just tell us who else is coming up.
And then Dawn Wells, of course, Marianne, and her book is called What Would Marianne Do from Gilligan's Island, of Gilligan's Island fame. She actually is a University of Washington graduate. So she's coming back and on December 10th at 7 p.m. And Fabio is going to be with us December 8th at 2 p.m.
Right. And so admission is free for those. And so December 8th for Fabio at 2 p.m. and December 10th, I believe it was.
Yep, at 7 p.m.
At
University Bookstore on the Ave.
Yeah, very good. And what was the... I know Gilligan's Island. Everybody knows Gilligan's Island except me because I didn't grow up here, okay?
Well, she was Marianne on Gilligan's Island. She was the girl next door. She wasn't Ginger.
And so she's going to be at the bookstore talking about her new book, which is called what?
What Would Marianne Do?
What Would Marianne Do? All right, so I think we've very quickly got time for those last two books. I want to try and get them in since you brought them over here.
All right. First one is Mocha Dick, The Legend and the Fury. And these illustrations, I think, are Caldecott Award medal.
And these are children's books again.
Yes, children's books again. The Mocha Dick, The Legend and the Fury by Brian Heintz with illustrations by Randall Enos. It's actually about Moby Dick. And he really was a killer whale that was white in South America. So it's a kid's book about it, and
awesome.
It's really terrific.
And it's by Brian Heintz and Randall
Enos.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the last one is called The Promise by Nicola Davies, illustrated by Laura Carlin. It's about a thug, a young girl who goes around mugging people in ugly cities. And one day she mugs an old woman who says, please take it and plant them. So when she finds out what they are, which are acorns, she feels compelled to go planting all the acorns in all the cities that she goes to. And the cities become beautiful because the trees grow. And then at the very end, she's mugged, and she says, please go plant them.
Ah, interesting. And I see that has a sticker on the front. That's another award-winning book.
Yeah, actually, it's a Best Illustrated Children's Book Award from the New York Times Book Review.
Excellent. Pam Cady, thank you. What a great selection of books you brought for us. And I would love to sit down and read them all a bit. Thank you so much for being with us. And tell us where people can find out more about University Bookstore.
You can go to ubookstore.com, or you can go to any location in Bellevue, Mill Creek, and, of course, the University District
All right.
as well. And Tacoma.
And Tacoma. Thank you so much for being with us. That's on Pacific Avenue and down in Tacoma, right?
Yes, it
yeah,
is.
Yeah. I know. I've seen that. I've been there. All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Pam Cady. Do appreciate it. And thank you to University Bookstore, too. And I want to thank each of you for listening in today. I know we shared a ton of information in a very short period of time there. I do have a list of the books that Pam brought in today. If you'd like to get a copy of those, you can reach me at info@conversationslive.net, info@conversationslive.net. You can also reach me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back next week with a new live show. Until then, live well, live strong. If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net.